The following is a product of the Uprising High School Ministry at the Grove.
So we're talking about friendship today. And I just thought there's no cooler moment of that I could think of cinematically. Is that the right word? I'm going to go cinematically. Cinematically, there's no cooler moment I can think of than that moment when you watch two extremely grown men still living with their parents choosing to become best friends. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today. Let me pray, and then we'll get started. God, thank you for this room. I thank you for everyone that you've brought here today, God. Ask that you would be here, God, that this morning would continue to be about you. Just pray that these words would not be mine, God, but they would be yours, and that we would all understand friendship just a little bit better. It's in your son's name we pray. Amen. All right, so friendship. How do friendships start? Think of who you're friends with. All right, maybe you're sitting next to a friend or a stranger, and you can start a friendship right now. But think about how did you become friends? What started the friendship? I just saw someone's putting their arms around. Will's becoming friends right now. Somebody, good job. Yeah, a common interest. What, like, do you have an example?
Wrestling.
Okay, so you like to wrestle, and you're like, hey, guy that I don't really know, but we're wearing these really tight, awkward outfits and on top of each other right now, let's be friends, right? Yeah, that's normal. And I just gave you a ringworm. Congratulations. All right, so you save someone's life, you'll be their friend. That makes sense. There's a story in here we're going to get to later about removing foreskins. If it's in the Bible, I can talk about it if it's in the Bible, which there's a lot in the Bible. How do your friendships start? So if you think about it, you really do. Someone named it, you had common interests, something that you find that you have something in common with, or an experience. That was actually really perfect that those two examples came up. It couldn't have gone better if I told you to do that, but I didn't at all, which is awesome. So yeah, you have an experience, or you realize you have something in common. In fifth and sixth grade, I kind of gave this talk a little bit, and they said, when your parents' friends are friends with their parents' friends, and then you have to be their friend. I'm like, yeah, okay, that doesn't sound very fun, but yeah, okay, that's an example, I guess. For me, I think about this experience I had in seventh grade. The concept of developing a friendship with somebody who is of not the same gender for, you know, the purpose of getting in a long committed relationship of somewhere between 5 to 7 days. And that's a long time in junior high. If someone went 2 weeks, it was like they're about to get married. But in seventh grade, I decided to be more intentional about seeking relationships or friendships with females. And it wasn't always, like, you know, great. I wasn't very successful. I was very awkward in this stage of my life. I was very lanky. My legs at this point in my life had decided to grow, but the rest of me had not. So it was just kind of like a head on some legs. And kind of goofy looking. But so my mom in seventh grade had what's called bring your kids to work day or kids at work day. How many of you, has anybody ever done anything like that? Your parents take you? Okay, weird experience. My mom's job was not very exciting. She works for a giant corporation that does payroll for other huge corporations and does their taxes, so like Coca-Cola, things like that, that have like umpteen amount of employees. And so which means it's just a huge office building with glass windows, and every floor is like 500 cubicles and a bunch of people who hate their lives, and the most exciting part of their day is when they get to go get a drink of water or take a smoke break. And so we get there, we get in, they give us name badges / hello, my name is stickers, and they start walking us around, and they kind of kept us all in an age group a little bit. Sorry, I got this thing, it's like trying to kill me back here. They kept us all in a similar age group, so it was me and a bunch of other like 12 to 14-year-old kids, and we're walking through this office, and we come up, and we're about to come up to the elevator, all right? Now, the problem is that morning, I had a breakfast burrito, and breakfast burritos are like, there's two things guaranteed to happen if you start your day with a breakfast burrito. One, like, you're fed, you've got all the nutrients you need, you're fantastic, like, there's no better, it has it all. It has like, tortilla, which I think is a food group, and it has egg, and it has chorizo if you're an American, or if you're really weird, you like ham, and that's blah. Bacon is okay sometimes. Or if you're really hardcore, you just get all the meat in the world. And it's got salsa and cheese and beans and whatever else you want to put in there, right? It's fantastic. Potatoes, wow, my stomach right now. I'm not kidding you. If I put the mic down. No, I can't hear it. Scrowling. I thought maybe because I could hear it, you could. Nope. So I had this burrito. So it's good. But the second thing that's guaranteed to happen, especially in my family, I'm pretty sure it's genetic, is flatulation, which is a scientific word for farting. And so we're getting ready to get on this elevator, and there's all kinds of cubicles everywhere around us, and there's a group of like 15 of us, and there's this girl that I've been kind of like trying to stand next to you a lot, which now I think about it was more stalking the whole time. And we're getting on this elevator, I'm like, oh my gosh, in my stomach, I just kind of felt it, like, just like winding up. Like sometimes you feel a fart winding up like a pitch in baseball, and you just the arm was just winding up, it was just ready just to unload. And I'm like, oh my gosh, if I get on the elevator, like this is not gonna go well. Like it's gonna kill everybody in the elevator. So I'm like, I gotta get this out somehow. And I kind of like try to back up, and I can't because there's like cubicle wall right there, and it's like everybody just kind of standing around. I'm like, oh my gosh, okay. So I'm like, I do what all of us try to do. If you have to and you can't hold it in, you try to be quiet about it. So there's a technique, right? Like if you can just hold it in and just squeeze the glutes really tight. You just squeeze them really tight and it holds, doesn't let anything out. And then, but if you keep it too tight and you try to let something out, it'll make the balloon, you know, noise. And you don't want that because that's like, are you 80 and trying to fart? What's happening? And so you kind of have to hit the perfect spot, but I did not hit the perfect spot. And I'm not kidding you. This thing came flying out so loud. And I don't know what it is about my family, but we have wet-sounding farts even when they're not wet farts. And so it just gone super loud to the point to where it wasn't just like, oh, someone farted. I wonder who that was. But you heard it, and you had enough time to figure out where the sound was coming from. Oh, that guy's butt. And process, is that your phone, pager, what is it? Yeah, we didn't have phones yet. So is that your pager? No, it's my butt is farting because I had a breakfast burrito. And everybody go, oh my gosh, that guy's farting. Still. Yep, he's still farting. And to the point to where it's just everything gets quiet. Like all you heard really was, you know, keyboards like that. And then that stops. And then everybody's looking at me. Like, who do I look at? You know, like someone's watching something funny on YouTube or something, which didn't exist either. And I was just like, excuse me. And then everybody lost it. I mean, full on tears, crying. This office turned, maybe it was the gas, I don't know. But it was, they were just laughing hysterically. I lost it. Everybody's like, Kim, did you hear your son farted today? It was so funny. And it smelled. What do you feed him? And I got the girl's phone number. Apparently, if you fart in front of a bunch of people, girls are impressed by that. And so, guys, hit up Les Faves in the morning on the way to school. I'm telling you. Find the cutest girl. Just rip one next to her. Say, excuse me. And number, guaranteed. Promise. That's how that friendship started. Now, I won't talk about how it ended because I'm a moron. But it was about 2 weeks. Long distance. You know, about 7 miles. And thus far in junior high when, you know, walking is your main way of getting around. But so we have all these ways that friendships begin. We're going to be continuing this look at David's story and his life. And today we're going to be looking at this friendship that he developed with Jonathan. Now, Jonathan is Saul, who's the king, right? Remember last week we talked about David and Goliath, and Saul was the king and all his army. Like, they were too scared, wouldn't go fight the giant. David shows up like, what are you worried about? Like, you don't even have to really do anything. All you have to do is walk out there, spit on the guy, and God's going to kill him. Like, God will take care of it. God will deliver it. Like, just, where's your faith? So David kills the giant. And then David has this long conversation at the end of chapter 17 with Saul. It doesn't say what they talked about. It just said they talked for a long time. But after that, 1 Samuel 18, verse 1, says, after David finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off his robe that he was wearing and he gave it to David, along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. Not too many friendships start with, here, have all my clothes while I bask in my nudity. She's like, no, dude, keep it. I'll be your friend. Please, just leave it on, you know? But basically what he was showing, like, you're my equal. Like, here, take what I have. And they become one in spirit, which is key. Because remember, what they just became best friends, literally at that moment. Like, did we just become best friends? Yes, okay, let me get naked and give you my clothes. And so they become these great friends. But the reason why is because of David's faith, right? Remember, Jonathan just watched this guy go out and do something that no one else was willing to do. He went out and defeated this giant, but more than that, he had faith that God would show up. I said last week that the story of David and Goliath really shouldn't be called the story of David and Goliath. It should be called the story of God and Goliath, because God is the one who shows up, and it's David's faith in God that makes that allows God to show up and have that happen. And so this friendship, Jonathan seeks him out, not just because he's famous and this great warrior, but because this guy's faith is like off the charts. He hasn't seen faith like this before. And so he's just stoked. And he says, and it says that they become one in spirit, essentially saying that their friendship is founded on Christ, or their friendship is founded in their faith and in God. And so the start of your friendship is sort of what builds the foundation. Think about your friendships. What are your friendships founded on? Now, it doesn't mean that, like, if you become friends with someone because you both like Pokemon, you know, that, like, it's not going to work out. It just means, what are you going to, like, that might be the commonality or whatever. You might have the experience where you fart and everybody loves you. But what is really, what's going to start that friendship? What are you going to build that friendship on? Because if it's just something like video games or whatever, you know, like, you're going to beat your friend because he's not very good at video games and he's awful and he sucks. And because you beat him the whole time, he's just never going to want to play with you again. And he doesn't ever want to play video games, but that's all your friendship is founded on. Well, then there goes your friendship. But if it's founded on something bigger than that, something solid, a solid foundation like God and faith in God, that can't be shooken. That doesn't mean that your friendship won't have hard stuff. It doesn't mean you won't experience difficult things. It just means that your friendship won't be broken. You'll be able to stand solid, firm on faith in God, being one in spirit. 1 Samuel 18:24-29 and 19:1-5. Because I have a lot to cover, I kind of have to skip stuff. And I hope that you go home and you read 1 Samuel 18 through 20, though, because it's legit. 18:24. When Saul's servants told them what David had said, Saul replied, "Say to David, the king wants no price for a bride other than 100 Philistine foreskins." Okay. Backstory. So basically, David at this point, Saul offers David his oldest daughter. David's like, "No, I'm not really good with that." But he likes, I don't even know how to say her name. I think it's Michelle or Michael or one of the two. M-I-C-H-A-L. I don't speak Hebrew or know how that translates or anything. I'll do a better job for you that next time. But he wants to marry her, and he says, okay, fine. And Saul at this point, he's beginning to, like, be scared of David. Like, not scared that David's going to hurt him, but he's threatened by him, right? Saul was the king. He was the elite, chosen by the people. He was attractive, wise, powerful, faithful even. And now he's starting to lose that, and he's lost God's favor, and God's favor is now on David, and Saul can see, like, this guy's, he's going to take over. He's going to be king. I can't let that happen. I don't want to lose everything that I have. I don't want to lose this, and so he wants to kill him, and so he sends them off to war after war, battle after battle, and when David comes and says, "Listen, I want to marry your daughter," he says, "Awesome, great, I have the perfect, all I want is 100 foreskins from the Philistines specifically. So go out and kill 100 Philistine dudes, cut off their situation, skin area, and bring that satchel of nastiness back to me, and you can have my daughter." Satchel of nastiness. That's what I should change the title of my talk to. I originally titled it BFF Goals, but I like Satchel of Nastiness better. David goes out, and not only does he get 100 foreskins, but he gets 200. 200, he doubles what he's supposed to do. Let me read now 19:1-5. So Saul told his son Jonathan and all the attendants to kill David, because obviously he went out, he survived, so he gets to marry his daughter, and his daughter loves David. Jonathan loves David. Everybody in Saul's life who used to praise and love Saul, and not that they stopped loving Saul, they just really like David. Straight up, totally like Buzz Lightyear syndrome. You know, like you're Woody and everything's awesome. You're like top of the bed, your room's decked out for you. And then Buzz Lightyear shows up, bam, your whole life gets rocked. You know? That wasn't in my notes, but that's the best analogy I could come up with. That was great. Someone tell me to write that down after. So Saul says, Jonathan, come here, my son. And attendants, all you people, come here. You need to kill David. But Jonathan had taken great liking to David and warned him. My father Saul's looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into hiding and stay there. I'm going to go out and I'll stand with my father in the field where you are, and I'll speak to him about you and tell you what I find out. Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, let not the king wrong his servant David. He's not wronged you. And what he has done has benefited you greatly. He took his life in his hands when he killed the Philistine. The Lord won a great victory for all Israel. And you saw it and were glad. Why then would you do wrong to an innocent man like David by killing him for no reason? Kind of sounds a little bit like what happened to Jesus. Pharisees and everyone around him. And so here's David. He's done this amazing thing. Became a servant for Saul. When Saul was stressed out, tormented, being by a demon, an evil spirit, like David would show up, play his little lyre, and you know, play some happy music for him, and the spirit would leave, and Saul would be happy. Like David did nothing but improve this guy's life. But it was almost like he did his job too well, and Saul was threatened, was like, all right, I got to kill you before you take my job. And so he tries to get everyone to kill him, and including his own son. But his son, Jonathan, who's David's essentially like best friend at this moment, stands up for him. When you think about your friends that you have, are they in that friendship with you for you or for themselves? And maybe even ask that about you or your friendships that you have. Are you in them for you or yourself? And what I mean by that is, when you're friends with someone, is it about how they make you feel? Is it about what they can do for you? Is it about how often they invite you somewhere? Is it about how nice they are to you? Or is it the opposite? Is it about what you can do for them? Is it about how you can be selfless in that relationship? When I look at Jonathan and David's friendship, this deep covenant built on faith, there's no selflessness there at all. Bless you. Bless you, child. There's no selfishness there whatsoever. 19:20-24. So David takes off, right? Saul's going to kill him. So David goes off into hiding, and he goes to hide out with Samuel, who's the prophet who wrote this book, or who this book's named after. And he's hiding out with him, and he's hiding out with all these guys, and they're all prophesying, and God's spirit is there. And it says they're all prophesying. Now, when it says they're prophesying, it's not like they're just like all babbling about what's going to happen in the future. What they're actually talking about is basically there's music going. It's just praise, worshiping God. God's spirit's there. They're all like just drunk on Jesus, like just full on inebriated by the spirit and uncontrollably just worshiping God. And Saul sends his servants. They go, they get there. In verse 19:20, says he sent his men to capture him. But when they saw a group of prophets prophesying, singing, dancing, praising God, with Samuel standing there as their leader, the spirit of God came on Saul's men too. And they also prophesied. Saul was told about this, and then he goes and he takes off. And yet when he gets there, he sees the same thing. Same thing happens to him times 10, because not only does he start singing and going crazy too, but he strips down butt naked and begins to prophesy as well. And it says, he lay naked all that day and all that night. This is why people say, is Saul also among the prophets? Saul wants so badly to kill David, but God has just got his back so much that when his men go to kill him, right, they're going to kill him. And God puts a spirit on these guys to where they uncontrollably just start praising God. They can't help it. They're so overwhelmed. If you've ever been, I don't know if you've ever had a moment, maybe it was at a camp or something, but you just, or the moment you gave your life to Christ, you're just so overwhelmed by just how amazing God is. His spirit is just on you and in you. And you just can't help but just be in awe and respond to that. And with music playing and all that, it's going to be through praise and worship. And when you look at your friends, you look at your friendships, do your friends, will your friends do anything to be there for you? In chapter 20, verses 2 and 4, David's basically telling Jonathan, like, hey, your dad's going to kill me. What the heck? What did I do? And Jonathan's just like, I don't think it's going to happen. He says, never, Jonathan replied, you're not going to die. Jonathan goes on to say, after David tells him, trust me, he's trying to kill me. And Jonathan just says, fine. Verse 4, whatever you want me to do, I will do for you. Whatever you need. Like, Jonathan sees he needs to stand up for his friend. He's willing to do anything to stand up, not just to his dad, but the king of a nation. Not only could it hurt him from where he lives, but it can hurt him on a family level as well. For him standing up for him, standing up and sticking up for David. Are your friends the kind of friends that would do that for you? Are you the kind of friend that would do that for those in your life? I think something that's key here, in James 4, which we've been going through James, and we just kind of went over this past week, but James 4, it talks about how if you're a friend of this world, you're an enemy of God, right? In other words, whatever you're a friend of, anything that opposes that friend, you oppose that person, thing, whatever. And so, if you're a friend of God, you oppose and have to stand up for anything that's against God. And in this case, remember, Jonathan, he's friends with David, but he's not just friends with David because he likes David or because what David has to offer him or anything else about David other than he sought out David in friendship with David because of David's faith in God, because of how David lived his life for God and tried to. Trust me, David messed up, and we'll get into all that, you know, as we continue in the story. But Jonathan was his friend, and they were founded. That friendship was founded. Remember, they became one in spirit. Was founded on God. And so when you look at your friends, sometimes standing up for your friend doesn't mean defending them always, right? Because sometimes our friends are the ones that are in the wrong or maybe even against God. So if you're going to have a friendship founded in faith, you stand up for what's right. Some of you have great friends, but they're just as stupid as you, and so they're going to end up in the principal's office with you or jail or, you know, wherever it is you might end up. But that's not what makes the great friend. The great friend doesn't just stand up for you. They stand up for what's right, regardless of what wrongness opposes that right. And an even better friend is going to stand up for that right if you're in the wrong and call you out on it and help you through that. And struggle through whatever it is you're struggling through. They're not going to endorse the wrong in your life. They're not going to support the wrong in your life. And we're called to not do that as well. We're called to stand up for what's right in our friends' lives and to stand against what's wrong. 1 Samuel 20. 26, 32. It's the last little bit of story we're going to go over today. Saul said nothing that day, for he thought something must have happened to David to make him ceremonial and clean. So they basically have this big feast, this big party that happens all the time, and David should have been there, and he's not, and Saul just assumes, well, I guess the guy's just a tool. He must be unclean. He must not be good enough to be here, whatever. He sort of assumes the worst, right? And I think we do that sometimes with our friends. Saul, in this story, is an example of a bad friend. David puts Saul before him, no matter how much Saul wants to kill him, serves him, plays music for him, does all this stuff for him, right? And yet Saul continues to kill him, and he's also the friend that assumes the worst, right? You don't show up somewhere, and your friend automatically assumes, I guess they don't like me. I guess they just don't want to be my friend. I guess they hate me. Apparently, none of my friends want to be with me, right? We instantly assume the worst when plans don't go according to, if our friends don't show up, we assume the worst of them. Instead of thinking, man, are they okay? Is everything all right? You know, are they okay? Instead of thinking bad about them. Saul's anger flared up. Jonathan then stands up for him. And says, Saul's anger flared up at Jonathan, and he said to them, "You son of a perverse and rebellious woman," which nowadays would be the female dog term. Son of a perverse and rebellious woman. "Don't I know that you have sided with the son of Jesse, to your own shame and to the shame of the mother who bore you? As long as the son of Jesse lives on this earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Now send someone to bring him to me, for he must die." "Why should he be put to death? What has he done?" Jonathan asked his father. But Saul hurled his spear at him to kill him. Then Jonathan knew that his father intended to kill David, as if he didn't figure that out already. It's interesting, you know, Saul doesn't even want to use David's name at this point. He starts referring to him as that guy, that Jesse's son, that kid. Can't believe you would take his side. This, by the way, is like the fourth or fifth time he's like chucked spears at people in this story. I just didn't read those other parts, which is Saul, I don't just, like that, you know, he's a guy who probably shouldn't have a spear in his hand because he likes to throw them at people. And we see this moment where Jonathan just realizes, man, okay, there's no hope for David here. Saul, my father, wants to kill him. So Jonathan meets up with David and basically goes to tell him that he needs to leave. And he says, after that, David got up from the south side and of the stone and came before Jonathan and bowed down three times with his face to the ground. And then they kissed each other and they wept together. But David wept the most. Jonathan said to David, "Go in peace, for we have sworn friendship with each other in the name of the Lord, saying, 'The Lord is witness between you and me, and between your descendants and my descendants forever.'" Then David left, and Jonathan went back to the town. Something I love about this, and that was everything. They used to have ceremonies for everything back in the day. I love the idea of having a ceremony of becoming best friends. And I think that if you have a best friend, or if you have any good friends, and they're people of faith, not they're perfect, but they're people who try to pursue a life for God daily, right? I think you guys should just have a ceremony and just say, we're going to make this friendship all about God. We're going to keep him at the center of it. And have this off, maybe that sounds weird or whatever, but I just think it's, things like that should be celebrated. We celebrate when two people come together to be united for life. Like, why don't we do that with our friends as well? Why don't we make that into a ceremony and celebrate becoming friends and dedicating our lives to each other in the name of the Lord, in the name of Christ? I mean, that's huge and that's significant. I think too often we let our friendships just be shallow. Just someone to be with, just so I'm not alone. Someone to do something with so I don't have to sit at home. Friendship should be way deeper than that. We should be digging deep foundations, and that foundation should be built on faith in God, not on insignificant, like, we like to dress the same, or we like the same music or movies, like, I mean, that stuff's great and that stuff's fun to have in a friendship, but that should be parts of it, not what you build your friendships on. What I think is really crazy about how this story ends is that you have these two guys here who are really, really close, and they know that even though they don't want to leave each other, what's best for the other person is that David has to leave. In other words, they're willing to give up the friendship, so to speak, to put the other person first. If you're in the worship team, you can come on up. I'm just going to end with this last thought while you guys come up, so we can do one more song. I think that we need to be willing to give up everything in our friendships. I mean, everything. To be completely selfless. And even sometimes when that friend, it's better for them to go. It's better for them to be somewhere else. God's calling them somewhere else. To not be upset that they're leaving you, but to be stoked that they're going to be in God's will and to be safe or be protected or whatever. Whatever it takes to put your friend first, even if it means losing that friendship. Because what we see here is true friendship does not rest in the dimension of distance anywhere. Friendship exists outside of space. It doesn't matter how far you are from someone, that friendship still exists, and you can still keep that person above yourself and love them more than yourself. Ultimately, I think what we need and what I've learned out of this and what I wish I knew in high school is that we need more friendships founded on Christ and built with Christ and faith in Him at the center of it. Let's pray and then we'll stand together and do one final song. God, just thank you so much for these two guys who just got it, who just got what true friendship was about. Not about what the friend could offer us, God, but about just seeing someone who loves you so much that you just want to help that person love you more. And then that person would do the same for us. God, we need those friendships in our life. I pray that you would help us all to find those people. And God, I pray more than anything you help us to be those people. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.